Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. This is episode 314 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penner, your host, and I'm so glad you're joining with us today. We have a great guest lined up, and I'm so excited for who we have upcoming as well. So make sure you stay tuned for today, of course, since you're already here. But then also stay tuned for the upcoming episodes, because we have some past guests who are returning to the show after doing well at the most recent Pro Tour. It's so cool. I love that. I absolutely love having guests on the show, and then, you know, 6 months, a year, year and a half later, sometimes they come back because they are continuing to do well in Magic. And it's so cool to see what's been going on and the ups and downs that they've experienced in that time and just the role that Magic has played in their lives. It's really, really cool. So today, great guests lined up. Over the next 2 weeks, we have some more great guests lined up, and I'm just really excited to be on this journey with you. Before diving into the interview, I want to say thank you so much to Paragon City Games, who has been a proud supporter of the show. They provide the prize support for our patron-exclusive giveaways, as well as for the league that we do each and every set. Now, speaking of both those things, first of all, the patron-exclusive giveaway for the month of November goes to Jason Myers. I am happy to announce that Jason Myers is the winner of that giveaway. Thank you so much, Jason, for your support of the show, for being a patron, and it just means a lot to me. It really, really does, so thank you. And as a token of our appreciation, we're sending you a Guilds of Ravnica bundle, so thank you so much. Now, the other thing I mentioned was the sealed league that we do every set. I'm happy to announce that, even though it's a bit delayed, we are, in fact, doing a Guilds of Ravnica sealed league. It is starting up right now, so by the time you hear this, you'll be able to go to mtgpro2.com/sealed league. That will redirect you to the Facebook group where we get things kicked off. We'll allow a week or so for signups and payment, and then we'll get all the cards distributed. And since I know that the holidays are here and there's a lot of traveling and schedules might be hard to coordinate, things like that, we'll probably allow an extra week or so for the general round just to make sure that everybody has enough time to play the games that they need to. So as always, we'll do a cut to top eight with prizes for the top eight. So if you've been a longtime listener, then you know that we have a lot of fun doing these sealed leagues and people dive in and get to play. You get to keep all your cards, of course. It's super cheap to join, and so we'll definitely be able to accommodate you if you want to play some Magic with us. So again, mtgpro2.com/sealed league is where you can go to dive into the Guild of Ravnica sealed league that we have going on. So thank you again so much for tuning in today. Without further ado, let's bring in our guests, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a New England Magic the Gathering grinder who has top eighted one Grand Prix and won a Star City Games Legacy Classic. He also enjoys cooking, music, writing, and hopes to one day open an ice cream shop. Coming to us from Draycott, Massachusetts, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Zach Turgeon. Zach, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you, Sean?
Fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Most certainly.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Zach, you can find him on Twitter and Facebook, but Twitter is probably the preferred way to get a hold of him. He is at the amazing Zach, and that's the_amazing_Zach. So the amazing Zach on Twitter. Find him there. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him a question. But that is how you can connect with Zach if you so desire. So Zach, we love talking a little bit about the non-Magic stuff before we do Magic. So you're out there in Draycott. Are you born and raised there?
Basically, yeah. I've been living in Massachusetts my whole life.
Cool. And is Magic all you do, or are you going to school? Are you working? Obviously, you have these other hobbies that we want to dive into real quick, but tell us a little bit about the non-Magic stuff.
Actually, I just started a new job in HR. I have a degree in clinical sciences from UMass Lowell. That's basically what I'm doing right now. Is a lot of my free time is just spent either hanging out with friends, reconnecting with people, or playing a lot of Magic.
Cool. So a new job, doing Magic in your free time, but also we mentioned you love cooking and music and writing. So what kind of music are you into?
I'm one of those weird anti-music snobs where I really like everything, not necessarily every individual thing, but I jump genres all the time.
Cool. Very cool. What was the last, I guess, album or song that popped up on Spotify or whatever?
I've been listening a lot to Ghost lately.
Okay. Very cool. Very neat. And cooking, how'd you get into that?
When I was in college, I started watching way too much of the Food Channel, and well, that's how it goes.
There you go. Very cool. And then you want to open up an ice cream shop. What's up with that?
So many, many years back, my friends got me a ice cream machine for Christmas. We used to kind of pool our money together to get bigger presents for each other.
Yeah.
And I really took to it because it's a really cool medium for like expressing yourself, in that you can have make spicy ice cream and tart ice cream and strong and different. It doesn't all need to just be vanilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so fun. Do you have any magic inspired ice cream?
I can't say I do.
I'll get to work on that. No, just kidding. Cool, yeah. Man. Well, that's fun. Like, it's so fun to, you know, learn about the people, you know, that that play magic. It's so fun to hear all these different interests that you have and how you're able to do that. And magic, of course, being chief among them. You said you're spending a lot of time playing magic, which is awesome. And we would love to learn about your origin story. We want to go back in time and have you take us through your journey from the beginning all the way up into your Grand Prix experience. And so tell us the story of the time that you very first saw or played with magic cards.
So this is going pretty far back. I think I was in second grade, I believe was the grade. I had a friend who, you know, they had magic cards. That's how it kind of goes with everyone, is someone, you know, you see your friend playing with them, you go, hey, what are those? And you end up kind of just looking, going, oh, these are cool. Can I play? And you just kind of go in from there. And then we played at like summer camps growing up and that type of thing. I took a break for a while, but I actually played a lot of other card games during that time, a lot of weird one-off games and stuff like that. And that's basically where my, you know, magic background was doing all these little things when I was a kid and then playing other games. And then one day someone was like, hey, you want to play magic again? And I was like, yeah, I guess I'm in.
Cool. Do you remember what your first set was way back in second grade?
So the first cards I can remember, I don't know exactly if it was my first set, but I remember cards from Ice Age.
Very cool. Very cool. And during your break, what were some of those one-off games that you played? Because my brother and I, we played a lot of random card games too when we were younger. So I'm curious if there's any overlap.
I played a lot of Overpower, the Marvel card game, and it was like Marvel DC, like superheroes card game. And I played a lot of what was Raw Deal, which was the WWE wrestling card game, which is actually a fantastic card game for what it was worth.
It's been a while since someone mentioned that, but I have heard the same thing, that it's like, you know, someone says, oh, WWE card game, and most everyone's never heard of it, but the people who have mentioned it to me have said that it actually was a pretty good game.
Yeah, it kind of went off the rails towards the end, but realistically, if you could get that card engine and put, you know, a different IP on it, it would sell great.
You mean off the ropes? Oh, just kidding. Okay. Oh. Anyways. cool. Very cool. Yeah, I didn't play either one of those. My brother and I, we did Babylon 5, Battletech, Dune. Like, those were all, like, card games that
packs sitting around my local comic book stores. Yeah, just kind of went off.
And then the Wheel of Time had a card game for a while, and I love the books. And so I didn't have anyone to play with. I just kind of collected the cards or whatever. But those are some of the ones that popped to my mind. And then Magic is obviously the one that has stuck around. And so after my big break, it was still around, and a friend of mine reintroduced me to it, and I came back in. So that's cool.
Yeah. Sounds like we have very similar paths there.
Very, very similar. So let's fast forward then to when you came back into Magic and you started taking Magic more seriously. What was that like? What was the early challenge that you faced when you started, you know, playing Magic?
I think the biggest challenge I faced when I first started playing again was I wasn't sure what I was good at. Mm. I knew what I thought I was good at, but it became pretty clear to me that, you know, when I kind of stepped back and looked at it, I was like, oh, turns out I'm actually good at something else. And I know that's a little weird to say when it comes to Magic, because you're like, oh, Magic's kind of one thing. But it turns out that, you know, I was like, oh, I'm really good at playing these like super mid-rangey grindy decks. And then when I look back, I was actually only really good at playing like the aggressive turn a corner aspect of them. I would always use my cards wrong. And basically when I was able to step back, I was like, oh, I should probably be learning more and not just thinking I'm already good at something.
Hmm. So there's a lot to unpack there. I would love to dive into how do you discover what you're good at? 'Cause that would be a really good thing to do, right? And then there's many projects out there who might not know, hey, like, what am I good at? I just play Magic, right? So looking back on it, was there a process or something that helped you realize, oh, hey, I'm good at this or not good at this? Like, what do you think about that?
Basically, what I did was I started kind of backing away from my own games and thinking about them. Well, basically, I started playing Magic Online. A lot of people are going to tell you that. But it allowed me to look at my own games, either actually watching the replays or just thinking more about them and going, man, I'm actually good. Like, I'm always picking the right time to do X, but I'm never picking the right time to do Y. So it allows you to both improve on, you know, whatever you're not doing, and then going, maybe I should try to focus my game plans and my decks around decks that I'm actually good at. Again, this is really nebulous, but generally, I think if you just spend more time on thinking outside of the game, it'll help you thinking inside the game.
Very cool. I love that. I think that's really neat. And that stepping back and being able to critically assess your own games, I think, is definitely something that I know I don't, and many people don't do enough of. So it sounds like that's a good place to start. So that's
cool. Yeah, it's a very hard thing to do because you need to be honest with yourself. If you're making mistakes, you can't be like, you can't give yourself excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. So you're coming back into Magic, you're playing. That goes on for a while, then you kind of take a step back, start realizing what you're good at, and then continue on, going to events and whatnot. What was your path, I guess, to into competitive Magic? Did you just jump right into, you know, Grand Prix, or did you kind of start doing the whole FNM thing and the PPTQ thing? Like, what was kind of that road?
So I came back right at the tail end of Innistrad, and yeah, I kind of just jumped in. I went to FNMs. We used to also have standard on Mondays and Wednesdays, and I would play if a Grand Prix or an SCG was like extremely local to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just kind of went whole hog in.
Okay, very good. That's awesome. So playing several times a week, getting it to those big events when you could and whatnot. That's awesome. That's really cool. So then as we kind of move through your path, obviously you've had ups and downs along the way. Every player has. And so to hone in on two of those moments, the first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience. So take us there and tell us what happened.
That's an interesting one because, again, I try not to focus on necessarily things being bad, and I tend to try to learn from them. But overall, I think my worst Magic moment is actually pretty recently. And I'm not saying it's a single moment, but it was actually this last Standard season. Mm-hmm. For the life of me, I couldn't win a game. I don't know why, or at least I didn't think I knew why. I eventually figured it out. But for an entire season, you know, I went from beating up on these, you know, PPTQs and getting to the RPTQ and getting close to, you know, I couldn't do anything. And I was just misevaluating things. And it was entirely my fault. So I come from a different place in that I play all these different formats, and I like to be slightly outside of the box, not too far. And I couldn't wrap my head around the format, and it just drove me crazy. You know, I stopped. I don't guess I stopped playing Magic completely, but I went from playing it several times a week to, you know, just when I was forced to almost. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. It's the first time that's ever happened.
So you said that you realized that you were misevaluating the meta, the decks. Like, so what actually was going on?
Just everything. So normally when I start playing Magic, one of my strengths is that I'm pretty good at evaluating cards. And I don't know why there were some cards I was misevaluating. And I was going, that card's not good enough, particularly cards like Goblin Chain Whirler that turned out to be, yeah, very good. And then I'd build a deck and I'd play and I'd lose and be like, huh, that doesn't make any sense. And I was just, it was a hole in my game. And it was a real bad Magic summer because I couldn't win a match.
So what broke you out of that?
I guess new cards and it let me reevaluate those and then kind of look at things in context. I guess what I'm saying is like, I got stuck in a rut. And I pulled myself out of it when I was able to look at these new cards and go, oh, you know, I think this one's good, and I think this one's good, and I think this one's bad, and I think this one's bad. And then from there, I was like, oh, I know what I was doing wrong. I wasn't thinking about, you know, a cards in the right context. I was trying to get too cute effectively.
And do you have any tips for us to help us recognize when we might be stuck in a rut? And so rather than retrospectively realizing it, anything that we can do in the moment to recognize that?
If I had to go back and tell myself what to do, I would say, look at what other people are doing. It's not the answer that everyone wants to hear, but when you look at other people are doing and going, hey, why are they succeeding? Try to emulate why they're succeeding, even if you don't like it. Mm. What I was doing was I was trying to be my own person and avoid necessarily doing exactly what everyone else was. But looking back on it, if I had just done exactly what everyone else was doing, not only would I have been more successful, I maybe could have branched out further. Yeah. I could have figured out exactly what they were doing and going, hey, I can just warp on this just a little. Instead, I was way out in left field because I never bothered to look at what other people were doing and going and taking their ideas.
Cool. So if you find yourself stuck in a rut, then that's a good way to get yourself out, is to kind of look around and just kind of get back on the train, right? What is everyone else doing? Play that for a while, and then you can make your own tweaks and your own variations off once you've understood what's doing well and why.
Yeah, as far as magic is concerned, there's thousands and thousands of people doing well. You know, you can look towards them and have them do the work for you.
Yeah, very cool. Sweet. Now, the flip side, obviously, are our highs. So what would you say has been your proudest magic moment to date?
I'd actually probably say this past GP. Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool actually taking a deck that I had some real hands in designing and figuring out the sideboard and bringing it and kind of doing my own thing just a little bit, not a ton, not being too cute with it, but actually getting some validation going, hey, you know, I get to get on the Pro Tour because I did my own thing and it worked out well.
Sweet. Well, we're definitely going to dive into that more leading up to the Grand Prix. So tell us about the preparation for the Grand Prix. I mean, how far out did you pick a deck? Like, how much were you practicing? Just tell us all about the preparation.
So normally, I'm actually constantly trying decks. This time was a little bit different for me in that when the Guilds of Ravnica set came out, I was unemployed. So I wasn't traveling as much. I wasn't doing quite as much. I was just doing more things locally. And I really liked the look of the green-white Selesnya guild. So I took the deck. I built it. I built it the way I liked. I went to the first PPTQ of the season in my area and came in second. And that was cool. And I was like, so I changed a little bit more, went to the second PPTQ the next week, and I won it. And my friend was like, you know, GP jerseys in 2 weeks. I know you weren't planning on going because you're pretty poor right now, but you're clearly onto something here. You should probably go. And I was like, well, I can't attend any of the other PPTQs this season, so I can take the money that I was setting aside for that and go to Jersey. So it was kind of weird. Normally I'm, you know, very planned out in advance. You know, I'll know where I'm going in 4 months. I'll know where I'm going in 6 months. This was kind of a last minute thing where someone talked me into going.
Nice. So you put this deck together, and where did you find this deck? I mean, where did you see?
It was just, you know, I spend a lot of time when spoilers coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, I love spoiler season. It's my favorite time of the year. many people have said it's Christmas, and yeah, it truly is. Yeah. You know, every day you wake up, you see new things. I love looking at new cards and trying to figure out how they fit with stuff. And I really like, when it comes to at least standard decks, I really like these very linear mid-range decks that go over the top of other mid-range decks. And then I saw cards like March of the Multitudes and Amara, and I already knew that History of Benalia was, you know, a very powerful card, and they all seemed to fit together in this green-white token shell. So it was the first thing I tried, and it just kept working. And then I, you know, when I said, yeah, I'm going to finally go to Jersey, I kept trying other stuff online, but nothing had the same win rate as this, you know, random green-white tokens deck I built.
That's awesome. So you mentioned spoiler season being your favorite time of the year. Speaking of favorites, I'm really curious, what would you say is one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card of all time is Trinisphere.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. For those of us who don't know what that is, what is it? What does it do, and why do you like it?
It is a 3-mana artifact that says, as long as Trinisphere is untapped, if a spell would cost less than 3, it costs at least three. What that means is that, you know, if someone tries to cast a brainstorm, it costs two and a blue rather than a blue. Why do I like it? It's a card that punishes being incredibly efficient without punishing someone for trying to do cool things. You can put all these cool, big, fancy, flashy cards in your deck, and Trinisphere doesn't affect those, but it really, really punishes someone who's trying to get like super nitty gritty efficient.
That's awesome. And now I'm curious, what's your favorite set?
I don't know for constructed purposes. Actually, you know what? It's probably the same for both constructed and limited. It's Khan's Attack here. I love Khan's.
Cool. Good set. Very cool. Oh, man. Yeah. Just, you said the word favorite. Had a itch. Got to scratch it. So, cool.
Yeah.
Back on track. So, yeah, this awesome token deck that you put together did well at a couple local events. And then, hey, let's take this. And so, this deck hadn't really been seen before. Like you said, you had a major hand in putting it together, and so it hadn't really popped up in any tournaments, and you were kind of the first one to put it on the map.
So it's kind of weird. I developed it independently, but if you actually look at the Star City Open that happened at the first thing of the season, the finals, it was a team event, but the standard part of the finals was green white tokens versus green white tokens. But for some reason, no one talked about it. I still don't know why. To this day, it was like, oh, you know, my spot's blown up. I made this deck, and now everyone's going to know about it. And then the next week, no one cared. It's very strange to me.
Hmm. Wow.
It's one yet flew under the radar.
Well, cool. I mean, it worked out well for you. Obviously, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
obviously.
Awesome. So you had this deck, decided to go last minute, like you said, and then you get to the Grand Prix. And any big moments or highlights that you remember from day one?
So day one was interesting because I was incredibly tired. I accidentally decided to stay up for the entire Red Sox game the night before, and that was that 18-inning game that lasted till 4 in the morning.
What?
Yeah, it was insane. It was in the playoffs, and everyone else in my room had already fallen asleep. So I just decided, I'll watch this for the last, you know, 10 minutes of the game. Then the game got tied, and it went till 4 in the morning. So I was incredibly tired on day one. But so I lead off day one, and, you know, round three after my two buys, I run straight into Arilax. So straight into the fire.
Yeah.
But the deck he was playing was a red-white aggro deck, and I was playing a Selesnya deck, which naturally is just pretty good against that. So I ended up winning that one, and he expressed that he really liked my deck, and that was kind of cool. You know, the day goes on. Not a ton else is memorable. I end up taking my day one loss to a Jeskai, like, mid-range deck. Mm-hmm. That was actually pretty cool. But yeah, day one was, I'm not going to say not memorable, but, you know, it was a day of magic. It's a day at a Grand Prix. It's what you expect.
Yeah, yeah. Other than being extremely tired because you stayed up till 4 in the morning. But I mean, paired with Arilax at the beginning, that's a pretty cool story. And then kind of just move on from there. Pretty nice. And so what about day two?
Day two was a little bit more interesting. In my first match of the day, I get paired against a Jeskai control deck from a very good Canadian player. And he wipes the floor with me. Hmm. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, here goes my shot. Now I'm 7-2. Or 8-2, whatever it was at that point. And then I just kind of ran off the rest of the day. All my matches felt really easy for me until the last two. And in the last two, my gatekeepers to get to the Pro Tour were Huey Jensen and Owen Turtenwalt.
Oh my gosh, seriously?
Yep, those were my last two. But fortunately, they were on the same 75. And I felt my matchup was okay there. Not the best, but okay. And I end up beating them to make it in.
Wow. So that got you into the top eight?
Yep, where I actually faced Brad Nelson, who was on the same 75 as those two.
Oh, my gosh. And then that one got you?
Yeah, caught but Brad got me good.
Okay.
I kept some kind of medium hands that just didn't pan out in any way I wanted them to.
What were they playing?
They were on the red white, like Boros mid range Angels deck.
Yeah, good stuff. Man, that's cool. Just that day. And then so you started with Aurelax, you know, a known name, and then you ended with like three big names. So, like, that's kind of cool. You kind of get these big names on either end of your day, of your experience.
Yeah, it was nice because there is part of you who's like, oh, you know, you got the easy road. I at least can go, I didn't get the easy road. I had to fight for those last couple wins.
Yeah, make it count. Awesome. Well, that's so cool. So neat to hear that experience and how you handled it. And, you know, as you've played Magic against tons of different types of people and players and styles and decks, I'm sure you've learned and seen a lot. So what would you say is the biggest mistake that you've seen Magic players make?
The biggest mistake I've seen Magic players make, I'd probably say either not being critical of their own play, like I was saying earlier, or thinking that they're always ahead. Mm. I have a couple friends, and I know I've ran into this at some point, where, you know, you play a matchup and you're like, oh, you know, I'm favored in this matchup. And then the next matchup comes and you're like, I'm favored in this matchup. Next matchup comes, you're like, I'm favored in this matchup. And you're not approaching things critically. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that the biggest mistake is just not approaching things critically. If you just sit there and think, hey, I'm behind, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the truth. It just means that, you know, you're fighting from under. That's just the way it has to be sometimes. And being better prepared for that means that you're thinking about the matchup in the correct way.
Yeah, that's cool. What do you do to make sure that you keep that critical mind?
Normally, I try to put myself in my opponent's seat. If I were thinking about it from their end, would I think, hey, I'm the favorite here or I'm not? Because then you get to start seeing those biases you have where you're like, oh, I'm just going to use some legacy decks here. For if I'm on the side of lands and I'm like, I'm favored against Grixis Delver, and then I'm on the side of Grixis Delver and I'm like, hey, I'm favored versus lands. Well, then one of you has to be wrong. So it lets you sit there and think back and go, hey, maybe it's not me. Maybe I'm not the favorite here. Maybe I should be approaching this in a way where I need to use my cards in a very specific way rather than going, eh, I got some room to spare.
Hmm. Yeah, good call. Man, that's so cool. And I love how there's so much to look at and consider and think about in Magic, and how things that we do and learn in Magic we can actually pull out and apply elsewhere. And so I'd love to know, what have you learned from Magic, Zach, that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
That's actually really interesting. I'm not sure I've learned this from Magic the game as much as Magic the community, but I would say to try to be really accepting of everyone. And that's something that isn't always true of the community, but I found that since I've made a concerted effort to try to make everyone feel welcome, I have been, you know, not only felt better as a person, other people around me who used to have some, you know, let's just say attitude problems, they don't have them anymore because they're around different people and they're thinking about things differently. And it's just better to be positive. And that's something that I've really taken away from that.
And you've been able to apply that to other aspects, I'm sure, of your life, like at work or things like that.
Right. It's a weird thing to say that Magic made me more positive, but just the idea of trying to spearhead a community and trying to be like, no, everyone's here and we're going to have a good time regardless of what happens. And then obviously that's going to just trickle into the rest of my life because I'm going, hey, I had a good time when bad things happened in Magic. Why can't I have a good time when bad things happen in real life? You know, it's very just cool. Don't look at the downsides of everything.
Cool. Very cool. So you're moving along, you're learning, you're growing, you're observing, you're playing Magic, doing well at this Grand Prix. What would you say was the most effective part of your preparation? What part of your preparation paid off the most at GP New Jersey?
Probably the work I put in on my sideboard, which is kind of weird for me. That's normally one of my weaker points. But I realized that people were playing these like what I would define as small sweepers out of their sideboard, specifically Deafening Clarion and Ritual of Soot for people who are playing Standard right now. But they're these sweepers that kill only small things. And as a green-white tokens deck, I was, you know, full of a bunch of small creatures. So in my sideboard, I just started looking around. Like, I did a gatherer search for what I could put in, what's the best way to kind of what I would define as fork their removal, where you're going to force them to have the wrong removal. Hmm. And I found, what is it? It's a 6/6 for 4, sometimes has hexproof. I can't remember his name right now. Ferox, that's his name.
Okay.
And it was just exactly what I needed. And it wasn't in any of the other green-white sideboards. It wasn't seeing any standard play. And it was great for me all weekend. Every time I played that, my opponents picked it up and read it and was like, oh, this is going to be a problem. And, you know, it was just spending the time to find the right card for the right situation.
So what did that card do for you? It was a bigger creature that didn't get affected by their small wipes?
Yeah, if they had a card that said deal 3 damage to everything, it was a 4-mana 6/6. So you could lead small creature, small creature, small creature, that. And then if they had the 3 damage card, they were going to get smashed by the 6/6. And if they spent the time dealing with the 6/6, they get hit with the small creatures.
Ah.
It was just a good way to mess up their removal patterns.
Very clever. Good stuff. Man, that's awesome how you went about that and found that and was able to come up with an answer. Like you said, forking their removal. I think that's a really good lesson that we can take away. Just think about, okay, how are they going to deal with me? And then do a search, like you said, and find out how can I deal with that. I love it.
Absolutely. Right. If I was always prepared for their game one configuration, then that would be a problem because that's not what I'm going to face 2 out of 3 times.
Yeah.
So I need to kind of think how decks are going to try to react to you. Hmm. So then you can try to react to them ahead of time.
Love it. That's good. So you made it into the top 8. What did that mean for you as a Magic player?
It was really big. I'm not going to lie. I really, really, really came close a lot of times. Not necessarily to the Pro Tour, which is this, but I have a habit of coming in either 2nd or 9th, which everyone knows are the 2 worst place in Magic tournaments. So it was nice here to finally get myself onto the Pro Tour and to have everyone say my name. And I had some friends there in Jersey and, you know, everyone cheered. And it was just some nice gratification for that.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And which Pro Tour are you queued up for?
Cleveland.
Nice. And when's that again?
February. I don't know why they put a Cleveland GP or Pro Tour in February, but I guess we'll have to deal with the snow.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Sweet. So what are you going to do to prepare for your first Pro Tour?
I'm actually not sure because they haven't, I don't believe, announced the formats yet. I keep looking, but I believe it's going to be standard. And it's going to be roughly right after the next set. So probably the same thing I did for this one in that I really, really like spoiler season. I really like trying to figure out what the new cards are, which ones are good, and how they're going to interact with the old cards. So for me, it's just a lot of iteration, a lot of Magic Online, a lot of just putting in time, trying out different decks, trying out kind of off-the-wall strategies. Because even if it doesn't work, you may find a little piece of it that does. And then you can move that to another deck.
Very cool. That's exciting. And how many Pro Points do you have this season?
Truthfully, I don't know. It's going to be however many I had for that. I couldn't win the season before. I couldn't buy a win, so I certainly didn't get any then.
So you're laying a foundation for next season, maybe?
Oh, I'd love to.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Now, we mentioned way back in the bio that you won a Star City Games Legacy event, and you also mentioned a little bit ago that you've done some Legacy. So tell us about that. Like, what do you play in Legacy? Is that what you're known for? And
At least up until this, that's certainly what I've been known for. If you look up Mogcatcher or Blood Moon Stompy or any of those like red-based prison decks, you will basically find my picture next to them and sometimes literally find my picture next to them.
Nice.
That's what I'm known for. I picked up the deck like 6 years ago, and I've put a ton of work into it, kind of leading a lot of innovations in it. It's kind of my child at this point. I really do like it.
The Blood Moon Stompy deck?
Yes. Yeah. Cool. So for those who don't know, the way that Legacy works is everything is super efficient and super punishing if you screw up at all or miss anything. It's really, really nitty-gritty down to the wire. And this is a prison deck that effectively stops your opponent from playing cards and stops them from being super efficient. It just messes up all their plans.
Very cool. Very, very cool. And you've done quite well with that, obviously. You won Star City Games Legacy Classics. That's pretty cool. And I mean, what are the, where do you get to play Legacy, you know, these days? Because there's no like Legacy Pro Tour or anything like that. And I don't think they do Grand Prix for that. So you just kind of do the Star City Games circuit?
I'll play in Star City Games. We have a great local scene in New England for Legacy. I'm going to give my shout out here to Gaming Etc. They run Legacy, you know, twice a week.
Sweet.
And they have a great crowd for that. As well as I also play on Magic Online. And they do have Grand Prix. They're just few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Cool. So are there any non-Magic related things that you feel has helped you get better at Magic, whether it's like a book that you've read or, I don't know, like any habits or something that you have or rituals that you do that you feel impacts your mentality as a Magic player?
I watch a lot of sports. And I know that seems kind of weird, but sometimes you can take away what these teams take away and kind of apply the way that, you know, obviously you're looking at slogans and mottos, but they do really apply. And as a New Englander, I'm going to look at something like the Patriots' unofficial slogan there of "do your job," things like that. And I know it's kind of like cheesy, but realistically, if you start looking at how these teams work, and no matter what sport, you can take that over to Magic and realize, hey, you know, exactly that. Do your job. Don't be fancy. Don't be, you know, trying to do too much. Don't be trying to go out there and say that you're doing something that you're not. No, if you just bunker down and do your job, results will come eventually.
Cool. And then on the Magic side of things, when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic, what resources do you turn to that you can refer us to?
I'm kind of a content hound in that regard. I pretty much read and watch everything. Mm-hmm. I spend too much time doing it. I don't sleep much. So I'll watch, you know, whoever's leading on Twitch or if someone's playing a cool, innovative deck. I'll go through, you know, Star City Games, Channel Fireball, TCG Player, all those, you know, and read everything that's even remotely relevant to any of the competitive formats.
Cool.
It just really helps me, coming from like somewhat of an academic background, that I really like looking at these as articles, as a way to gain knowledge that would have taken me way more time if I did it on my own. Yeah. And that's an important thing to note, that whenever someone writes an article, you know, it takes you 10 minutes to read, but it took them 2-3 hours to write, and it took them a whole week to prepare for. So you're able to condense down their whole week into your 10 minutes, which is a very effective way to take in information.
That's really true. I didn't think about it that way. That, yeah, I mean, the time they spent in playing, you know, yeah, playing the game and analyzing it and understanding what's going on and writing the article, that's a really good way to think about it. It takes you 10 minutes to read, but it's a whole lot more than that time-wise of knowledge that you're absorbing. That's cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Sweet. Well, as we kind of turn the corner into the home stretch here, I want to remind the prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Zach, you can find him best on Twitter at @TheAmazingZach, and that's @the_amazing_Zach. So Zach, as we kind of part ways here, what is one last piece of guidance that you have for us? Is it something that you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
That's an interesting question. You know, I can't think of any like mantra or anything like that right now. But what I will say, like I said earlier, just be kind to people. You'll find that you become a better person and the people around you become better people. And then the people around them become better people. And eventually those people come back to you and you become, it just keeps going up. So, you know, just try your best to be your best. You know, you can always be better, whether that applies to something like Magic, whether that applies to you in life, whether that applies to you socially, you can always be better. So you just keep on striving, you know, don't settle.
Love it. Hey, Zach, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And I want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. I love your stories and how you told them and where you're going and what it means for you. And I love what you just said there. Try your best to be your best. I think that's the theme, if not title, of this episode for sure. You are a hero among planeswalkers, my friend, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be a man of screwed. Always draw what you need and depart your plane victorious.
Well, that doesn't sound like fun. Where's the fun in Magic if you don't get mana screwed every once in a while?
Oh, you contrarian, you.
Nah, you just got to live it.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Zach.
No problem.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Zach, for being here on the show. Prodigies, of course, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Zach Turgeon, where you can find links to anything that we may have mentioned, as well as a synopsis about what we talked about. And before we close up, I want to say congratulations again to Jason Myers, and thank you from the bottom of my heart, not only to you, Jason, but to all the patrons who support the show directly. You really mean. Thank you to Paragon City Games for your support of the show. Please check them out at ParagonCityGames.com if you have not yet. And one last quick reminder to come and join the Prodigy Sealed League for Guilds of Ravnica. Go to mtgpro2.com/sealed league. That will forward you to our Facebook group exclusively for this. So come and join us, check it out, and we'll love to have you there. All the details will be posted there where you can learn what we have going on, what the timetable is, and when that gets kicked off. So thank you so much for joining me today. Can't wait to do it again next week. And until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over, so you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.